Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show on Blog Talk.
Let's get it started in here.
And the bass keeps running, running, and running, running,
and running, running, and running, running, and running, running, and running, running, and running, running, and running, running, and
in this context, there's no disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect from all intellect and let the rhythm affect. To lose the inhibition, follow your intuition, free your inner soul and break away from tradition. Cause when we be out, girl, it's full of heat out. You wouldn't believe how we wow shit out. Burn it till it's burned out, turn it till it's turned out. Act up from northwest, east, south.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoned, get it started,
come on.
Get it started.
Parental guidance is suggested.
All right, all right, all right, all right. Well, here we go with another show. I am your host for the evening, Chris, a.k.a. Billy Bikerson, the Beer Man. We are minus Jeremy tonight. I do believe Jeremy is in hiding. He's hiding from that snow monster. He's out there on the road and encountering some bad weather. And needed some time off. You know, I think he said something about he was just going to settle in with a bottle of wine and watch the Hallmark Channel or something. I don't know. I'm not sure what Jeremy's up to. No, he's encountered some bad weather. He's had a pretty tough week. He is taking the night off. And as far as Daryl goes, Daryl was kind of a maybe for whether he's going to join us tonight or not. Let's see. Nope. I don't believe I got him. So he has been awake for a number of hours. I won't specify how many, just in case the FMCSA is listening. I don't know if Busyard Pete is on here listening. I doubt it, but we won't talk about how many hours he's been awake. He just finished driving and, he said he was going to take a nap. And I'll be honest, if I had been awake as long as he's been awake and I laid down to take a nap, I can guarantee you that nap would probably last about 10 hours. So I don't expect him to be on tonight, in all honesty. But if you are out there, you know I am kind of a weather geek. We've got some bad weather going from New Mexico to Canada, pretty much. Big line of snow affecting, believe it or not, parts of northeast New Mexico, and I believe some of western Oklahoma, northwest Texas, a little bit across northwest Missouri, western Iowa, and a whole big chunk of Minnesota and, of course, Wisconsin. And the reports I am getting is that, at least in parts of Minnesota, it's undrivable. It is undrivable. We got one listener that's out there that actually shut down for the night in his parking 15 miles from home. Because it's just that bad. He can't finish out the last 15 minutes to get home even. So if you're out there in those areas, please be careful. Don't try to be a hero. Get a good place to park and pull in there. And I'd also like to remind everybody, because I always forget to do this, I like to plug our Spotify channel. If you're listening live, that's great. If you're not able to finish the show, you can always go and listen not just to the most recent episode, thanks to our producer, Radio Kim. Literally every single episode we've ever done can be found on our Spotify channel under the name The Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. So there we go with that. Now, I myself am having a heck of a week here. I started off getting delayed. Well, you know, I loaded a piece of equipment down in Texas. It was 83 degrees. Then I got up to Nebraska. I went to get up one morning, and, my trailer brakes were froze. I probably lost about 45 minutes or so just trying to get those things unfroze. I had to run air brake antifreeze. There we go. I can get it right. And I think I had to run it through three or four times before I finally got those things to let loose. Went out, made my delivery, and then went out to my pickup just to find out that they were like the only facility for this particular company that shuts off their loading at 2:30, like the rest of them are 3:30. So I had to wait till the next day. And then I found out that the Port of Baltimore is closed Friday for St. Patrick's Day, believe it or not. Yeah, the entire port, you know, the entire Port of Baltimore closed for St. Patrick's Day on Friday. I didn't think that was exactly the type of holiday that we would close an entire international port for, but apparently it is. So maybe a stronger Irish presence out there in Baltimore than I realized. But that's the case. So now I'm out here on the road and I can't deliver until Monday now. So I'm in no hurry to get out to the East Coast. You know, I'm going to kind of take in my time. But yeah, it's pretty much going to be just me running the show tonight. Thanks to all those situations there. And if you started listening to the show earlier because you got a notification that the show had started, my apologies. As you all remember, last weekend we sprang the clocks forward an hour, and apparently the system that controls the scheduling for the radio show here, apparently it wasn't updated to reflect that time change. And so when I set the show up to start at our usual time, and to my surprise, and thanks to Brian for catching this, to my surprise, at 6 o'clock instead of 7 Central, the show just started without us. No host, no co-host, no listeners. It just started up, made the Blog Talk Radio announcement, and there was dead air for about 8 minutes before I caught it after Brian got a hold of me. And so I had to go in and completely scrap that episode and delete it out of our system and launch a new one with a new link. So if you got caught up in that whole fiasco of trying to listen to the show and wondering why there was no one there, well, my apologies now. You have the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say it. That right there is what happened. So, yeah, we're already getting the show off to a heck of a start here, or a heck of a non-start. But we're gonna go ahead here. I'm going to roll out the show tonight, and we've got a couple of guests lined up. They're going to come in and talk about this fine, robust economy that we are all experiencing. And, you know, I'm not one to try to break away from the format too much. So, you know, we've kind of got to play this little game here called Real or Satire, where we read headlines. And usually we have Daryl up to bat, and Daryl has to guess whether the headline that we're reciting is real or whether that is a satirical headline from a satire site. And, you know, it gets harder than you think. And I encourage you to play along as the audience as we run through this game and make your own guess as to which one you think it is. Now, if you're really, really up to date on all the headlines, you're probably going to do really well at this game. But if you're not really tuned in to all the headlines all the time, you're going to get caught by surprise. You might even get stumped. And so what I'm actually going to do tonight, just to try to liven things up just a little bit, since it's just me here, I'm actually going to bring one of our regular callers in here, and he is going to substitute for Daryl tonight. And so the way this is going to work is we're going to throw up. I keep saying we. I guess I should say I. I'm going to throw up to 7 pitches here. We're going to do this like baseball. Up to 7 headlines. And if they guess it right, that's considered a ball. If they guess it wrong, that is a strike. And they're either going to strike out or they're going to get on base to determine who the winner of this little game is. So without any further delay, let me go ahead and bring Brian live on the air. All right, and the thing is circling. Okay, Brian, you should be here. Brian, are you there?
I'm right here, right in my truck.
All right, right there in your truck, huh? Right where you're supposed to be. Good deal. Okay, so obviously I know you've obviously heard this game many times, and we've talked about it. So you know how the game goes. I don't have to explain the rules to you. I've already explained the rules to the audience. I know you were on here listening anyway. So are you ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's get after it. Hopefully, we can show. I don't know. Maybe we'll win for one for Team Daryl. Here we go.
All right. Substituting for the voice of reason, Radio Daryl. We've got Brian the Trucker. Here we go. Here's a windup, and here's the pitch. Singer Natasha Owens joined Steve Bannon to discuss her latest hit, Trump Won and You Know It. Is that a real headline or is that satire?
Well, I know who Steve Bannon
it.
Is. I have no idea who that other person is.
All right. So the headline is number one on iTunes. Singer Natasha Owens joined Steve Bannon to discuss her latest hit, Trump Won and You Know It. Trump Won and You Know It, the number one song on iTunes. Is this real or satire? What do you think?
I think it's satire because I don't think Steve Bannon is a big fan of Trump anymore. So I'm not so sure he's going to have somebody
You're
else.
You're right. That is a real headline, and believe it or not, yes, a song about Trump winning the election in 2020, believe it or not, is the number one seller on iTunes this week. You can't make this stuff up. All right. So
I believe that part. It's the Steve Bannon. I said, I believe that part was the Steve Bannon part that was throwing me. All right.
All right. So we got a strike on the batter. I guess let's go to number two. Former Pussycat Dolls member shares her vaccine injury story. Is that real or is that satire? The Pussycat Dolls, I believe, was like if I'm not mistaken, an all-female punk rock band. Did a female punk rocker from, I believe, the 80s or 90s, did she come forward to share her vaccine injury story? Real or satire? What do you
think? I think that's real. I think that one's real.
All right, all right. No strike there. That is real as well. All right, so now the question is, am I going to throw a curveball here? Am I going to stick with the fastball and see what you react to? We don't know if this next one's going to be real or fake. So here's a windup. Biden administration promises to tax Silicon Valley billionaires on all the money the federal government gave them. Is that a real headline or is that satire? Did Biden promise to tax the billionaires that the federal government just bailed out? Real or satire?
I think that's satire. I can believe it's real, but I think it's satire.
Damn it, man. All right. We got one and two. No, two and one. Wait. Yeah, right? Yeah, two balls and one strike. All right. So you need two more. Well, we each need two more. All right. Let's move on. Stephen Colbert completely baffles Kamala Harris when he asked her to describe her job duties. Real or satire? Was the VP completely baffled when she was asked to describe her job? Is that on a comedian show? Is that real or satire?
Well, frankly speaking, I think she'd be baffled if you asked her what the Constitution was. I think that's probably true.
Oh, man. All right. That is true. You're getting me tonight. You're getting me. I got one strike on you. You got three balls. One more. You go to first base. You win. You win the base. All right. I'm under the count now. All right. So where are we? All right. How about this one? Colin sues adoptive parents for $21 million in reparations. Real or satire?
Oh, that one's satire. I mean, I could believe it. It's a true headline, but I'm fairly certain that's satire.
Oh, man. And he takes his base. That one is, in fact, satire from the Babylon Bee. So, man, I got one strike on you. I kind of called it. I had a feeling I would only stump you on one or maybe two because I know you keep up with this stuff pretty well. I'm just going to talk about the other. Just for fun, we'll do the last two I had. I queued up seven here. So the next one, Biden calls on banks to stop collapsing.
I think that one's satire, but I could completely and totally believe that one would be true.
That one is, in fact, satire, and you're right. That does absolutely sound like something you would say. All right, last one. We'll see how this one goes. Is this a real headline or a satire headline? 9 signs your newborn baby might be trans.
Oh, man. See, now here's the problem. I'm fairly confident that's a real headline, but I wish it was not. Please, I'm begging you, show that my hope
it's crazy.
And faith in humanity
is crazy
completely...
times we're living in. But what are you going to call? Are you calling it real or satire?
Like I said, I think it's real. So help me not, want to jump off this planet. Tell me that I'm wrong.
All right. Well, fortunately for you, that one is satire. It is from the Babylon Bee, although it does sound alarmingly like a real headline that you would see on CNN. Unfortunately, it's a world we live in, what I'm going to do here is, since we've ran through that game, I'm going to give give out our number for the guest call-in line, and I'm going to explain the procedure for those that aren't aware. What we're going to do here is when you call into the show, I'll explain that. Let me give the number first. The number to call, if you would like to come on air with a question or comment about anything we're talking about tonight, is 516-387-1733. Now, once you've called in, you'll hear the Blog Talk Radio thing, and then you'll actually hear the show over your phone. You'll hear us talking, and once you can hear us talking, just pull up your dial pad and hit the number 1. When you hit the number 1, that will send a signal to the old switchboard and let me know that you have something to say, and I'm not even kidding you. You can't make this up. When I look on my switchboard, it literally has an icon of a hand being raised by your phone number, letting me know that you've raised your hand and want to speak. So call in, hit the number 1, let me know you got something to say, and we will work you into the programming here. And I'm going to give the number 1 more time. It is 516-387-1733. So now just kind of going back on some of these headlines and talking about them. So this singer, Natasha Owens, who I don't know her either. I just don't keep up with a lot of, I hate sounding like my parents. Love my parents, but I hate sounding like them sometimes. I don't like any of this new music. I think it's all a bunch of garbage. And I totally feel like, my mom or my dad here, back in like 1986 saying, that's just a bunch of noise and garbage. I really don't like a lot of the new music. But the singer, Natasha Owens, apparently she went on some talk show. This headline is from the Gateway Pundit, and actually went on there with Steve Bannon, and they were talking about her song, Trump Won and You Know It. I don't know how it happened, but that is number 1 on iTunes. I've even heard, and I don't know if you've heard anything about this or not, I saw another recent poll suggesting that the majority of all voters, not just Trump voters, but the majority of all voters now believe that the Democratic Party played a hand in sabotaging the 2020 election. Now, that does not mean that a majority of all voters believe the election was, quote, rigged, that there was anything awry with the way votes were counted or jamming mail-in ballots. But the majority of the voters, in light of, some of the recent news, I think probably what's affecting it big time is the revelations about the fact that the Hunter Biden laptop was real, had been in the FBI's possession for well over a year prior to the election, and that now from the Twitter files that the federal government, including the FBI, did in fact go in and coerce the social media companies to suppress that article and prevent it from being distributed. So I think that's probably, especially from like Democrats and independents, when they say that they believe the Democrats played a hand in sabotaging the election in 2020, I think they're probably more referring to that rather than voter fraud. But that's still a big statement. that even including the people who vote Democrat, there's still a majority of the people who voted that believe the Democrats sabotaged the election. What do you think about that, Brian?
Well, I mean, it amazes me now that finally we have the Biden laptop thing come out, and those of us that, you know, kind of follow politics to a certain extent, you know, we're sitting here like, okay, and, you know, it's like, we've known this. This isn't anything new to us. And I'm not talking about the exact, you know, the stuff that was on his laptop, just the fact that, you know, it was kind of an open secret what was going on with the Biden family among political people. And it's like, this didn't sway us at all because we already knew. And now all of a sudden these people are saying, if I would have known, I would never have voted for Joe Biden. Oh, you mean the FBI actually told Facebook that they couldn't say that they had to stop this? You mean that the people at Twitter made an actual legitimate campaign to stop this information that if I would have known, I wouldn't have voted for? You know, 20, 30 years ago, we had a special word for that. It was called tampering. So it doesn't amaze me. It genuinely doesn't amaze me at all that a majority of the country now, majority of the voters, believe that the Democrats played fast and loose with the rules. But then again, you know, they've got those sayings up in Chicago, you know, the vote isn't over till the election isn't over till the dead get their vote. So, I mean, we're not really covering any new ground on this one.
You know, I used to live in Chicago. And, of course, if you're not familiar, Chicago is an absolute Democrat stronghold. The Democrats run that city. In the last mayoral race, all seven candidates that were running for mayor were Democrats. There were no Republicans, no independents. Anyone that tries to run that's not a Democrat gets shut down by the machine. They'll go in, they'll object to the signature count, the signatures required. This actually happened. I believe this was actually the case in the election where Lori Lightfoot was elected, where there was a conservative that was running, went out and got more than enough signatures. And what they did is they objected to the signature count. And they then go through what they call a signature verification process, where they go through and verify with all the people that are on the rolls as having given their signature supporting this person, right? They go out and verify, hey, is this you? Did you really, you know, sign this for this person to run? And the way they do that is they pick out some thuggish, intimidating people that will go out and more or less convince you that, no, you're pretty sure that you didn't sign that. And so they got just enough signatures rejected to effectively remove this conservative from the ballot. So that's just the way that that politics are played. And I don't even remember now exactly where I was going with that about the Democrats. But, yeah, crazy scene. The Democrats are definitely known for their election interference tactics. But moving on. Let me check here, see if we have any more callers that want to jump in. Looks like we don't at the moment. So we'll move on here. Of course, the former Pussycat Dolls member shares her vaccine injury story. As you know, people from the punk rock scene, for the most part, have been absolutely, you know, pro-lockdown, pro-vaccine, pro-COVID everything. And, you know, you're a hateful grandma killer if you don't go with it. So the fact that you got a punk rocker, you know, coming out and saying, hey, I have vaccine injuries from this vaccine is kind of surprising to me. Moving on from that, though, you know, the whole nine signs your newborn baby might be trans. That was a satire from the Babylon Bee. But the problem is, you know, you can't tell satire because the world is so crazy right now. It's getting harder and harder every day to pick out reality or to pick out the jokes and the satire from the just insane reality of what we're living today. What do you think on that, Brian?
Well, I mean, it's pretty bad when you look at the Babylon Bee, and it's like you read the headline, and then CNN's getting pissed at them because it's like, hey, you took our story, you scooped us. What? That was a joke. But I mean, it seems to be more and more that way anymore. I mean, I followed the Babylon Bee whenever I get on Facebook. You know, I followed them since they started because it was funny and it was more or less religious jokes. You know. And it was kind of one of those things. And then they started coming out with political satire. And then it's like, oh, that's funny. And then the next thing you know, a couple of years later, it's like, wait, I remember reading that. And it was a joke. No, it's not a joke anymore. I mean, it's kind of getting bad, really. But, I mean, when you have, you know, these people saying, you know, they could tell that this child is going to be a racist at birth. It's like, what? Really? Come on now. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, you know, it's just like the other one here about Colin Kaepernick. You know, the satirical headline is that he sues his adoptive parents, you know, for reparations. However, he has been in the media lately saying that his adoptive parents were racist. Have you seen or read any of those headlines at all?
Yeah. It amazes me, you know, you have this sort of situation where these people adopt a kid, happens to be a different race, and all of a sudden, you know, after they have sacrificed, you know, countless amounts of money, time, energy, and I'm sure at one point in time, I shouldn't say it that way, let me rephrase, I'm sure that they still have affection for this kid, and they love him like he's their own kid, and then this kid, you know, to go on national TV, have all of this power. Remember, racism is power prejudice. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't have millions of dollars, and I don't have somebody shoving a TV camera in my face asking for my opinion. So in this instance, it seems like Colin Kaepernick has more power than I do. Huh, that's weird. I thought only I was supposed to be able to be the racist. But, you know, and then this... This jackass says, oh, yeah, they're racist. Like, I don't think anybody really understands what it is to adopt a child and the process you have to go through for that. And I'm not saying that these are great people. I don't know. I just know adoptive parents and the absolute hell that they have to go through to adopt kids. And, it's insane. I don't know. Maybe appreciate what you got. And be thankful that somebody didn't let you grow up on the streets. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I can't speak for the adoption process other than, you know, just from talking to some people that have gone through it. And you're right, it is a lengthy process. It's a costly process. It's a, you know, an emotional process. You know, I can only speak from what it's like to be a step-parent. And, you know, raising your own kids are, you know, that's tough, you know, because they hit that age where it suddenly occurs to them one day that you're the biggest idiot in the world and that you have no idea what you're talking about, you know, and they'll listen to everybody else's parents because everybody else's parents are the smartest in the world. They'll listen to a random person on the internet because random people on the internet are really smart, you know. But they won't listen to the parent. But, you know, you go through the same thing with step parents, you know. But you always have that added element of you're not my real dad, you're not my real mom. You know, it's kind of like I know as a step parent, you tend to get hit with all the obligations and responsibilities of being a parental figure, and all the expectations, you know, emotionally to be supportive and to be there and to love them like your own, you know, but then at the same time, you know, you don't get those other benefits that come with parenting. You know, you don't get that recognition, or a lot of times you don't get that emotion back. And, you know, that's tough enough. And I think the adoptive process, you know, probably is even more strenuous emotionally than that. And that's the biggest thing for me is, yeah, these parents, you know, they put out a lot of time, energy, and money, and primarily emotion, you know, into bringing this adoptive child into their house. And you know, he's a grown-ass man, and he's turning on them and acting like an angry 14-year-old. I mean, literally, his attitude towards his parents at this point really reminds me of that teenage rebellious stage that kids go through, you know, right there around 14, 15 years of age. But you know, moving on to that, the last two things that we talked about in the Real or Satire game, both relate to Biden and the banks. And I'm not going to talk about those right now, because we're going to kind of come back to this whole thing about the banking industry, the economy, the small business, et cetera, et cetera. And I know me and myself, you know, I'm out here running as an owner-operator, and I know how financially difficult it has become, in general, ever since Biden took office, but especially since about last March, right about a year ago, when the diesel prices started skyrocketing so fast that I'm not even kidding. I know you were right there with me. You know, you would book a load at one price and you would book it a few days in advance. And by the time you picked that load up and needed to make your first stop for diesel fuel a day or so later, right? Like literally our diesel price had gone up like $1 a gallon since you booked that load. And of course that's a big deal, especially if you're running, you know, if you're one of those loads that's requiring 250, 300 gallons of fuel, all of a sudden, you know, your operating cost on that load just took a $300 jump unexpectedly and seemingly overnight after you booked it at a certain price. And of course, that comes out of your take-home pay. But it has been a tough road out here. But what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to bring another guest on. And we're going to let him talk a little bit about the trucking industry and what's happening out here on the roads. And this is Daniel Doris, and Daniel has his own authority, his own trucking company under his name. And we're going to bring him on and see what he has to say about this here. Daniel, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing, guys?
Oh man. You know what? If I was any better, well, never mind. I'm not going to say that. How are you doing, Daniel?
I am doing fine. I just got through doing a start of a 7-3 split, and I'm working my way over towards Columbus, Ohio, so I can switch out loads and get started towards Texas. So, you know, just doing my thing, making my rounds.
Making your rounds. Well, let me ask you, because I know you got your own authority, which means that, you know, you pay all the bills on that truck. And I know we talked earlier, I know you kind of switched trucks to a more fuel-efficient model and all that to kind of help cut costs. But going back to last March, and I know you remember this damn well as well as I do, when all of a sudden the diesel prices just started literally going up every day, 10, 20 cents a day, and a week later you're paying $1, $1.20 a gallon more than you were the week before. What kind of financial difficulties have you noticed in the trucking business since then?
Probably the biggest thing is, you know, knowing your worth of where you're running at, and you try to pattern yourself to get fuel in different spots, you know, that's more, I guess, cost effective to be purchasing fuel in, so that you can get the most out of your runs, you know, so you're maximizing your profits. And since for the last couple years now that I've had my own authority, you know, that's been a huge factor, is learning a lot of this, you know, that I had been kind of grooming myself and learning, but I still hadn't got there yet, and now it just kind of all sinks in. You know, you got to do what you got to do to know, you know, how much it costs you to operate a truck down the road and to figure that out. And with fuel, if you was paying $5 a gallon for fuel where it was at there for a while and your truck got, you know, 5 mile a gallon, it cost you $1 per mile just to operate the truck with fuel. And that's not including any maintenance or anything else involved in that truck. That's just strictly your fuel cost. And a lot of guys, you know, they took a lot of that for granted whenever they was doing their figures and bidding these lanes. And I mean, whenever fuel went so high, it was like the higher the fuel cost got, the cheaper the lanes got. And I couldn't understand why until I started talking to drivers, and they just, I mean, most of them didn't know how to bid their lanes. You know, they knew that if that truck wasn't moving, that they wasn't going to be able to make a paycheck to keep the truck, the bills at home paid. But what they wasn't looking at is the longevity of what they was doing to the truck, because they couldn't afford the maintenance and tires and all that on the truck. So, I mean, it was a big undertaking.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things, you know, that I noticed is that the fuel surcharge rates, they were staying steady with they lagged behind. You know, the fuel would jump up, and, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks later, you know, you would see the fuel surcharge, you know, start climbing to match it. But at the same time that was happening, because of the inflation, the market itself was slowing down. So the number of loads, and for those that are not familiar in the trucking industry, we have a thing called a load-to-truck ratio. That is the number of loads available compared to the number of trucks available in a given area to move them. And typically, the higher that ratio goes on the load side to trucks, the higher the rates go, because what essentially starts happening is shippers start competing with each other to get the next available truck, right? So they know that, well, we can put this load out there and we can offer to pay this much, which isn't that great of a rate. And, you know, eventually we'll get a truck to move it, but no one's going to jump on it. But if they need that load moved quickly, they have to throw that out there at a rate that they know will get the attention, you know, of all the trucking companies out there. And so they'll throw it out. If they really want that load moved, they'll put it in at a higher price. And then somebody else will come along and they really need something moved quickly, and they see that the going hot rate is this, and they try to one up it. So you get into a bidding war where the shippers are just going up and up and up on their rates in order to attract trucks. And when the inflation really started to hit, and it was hitting regular people, all people, all of a sudden people, well, they bought less, right? They had less disposable income. And because of that, they weren't buying as much, right? Because they only make X amount of money per week, and they put X amount of you know, they spend X amount of money each week on gas to get, you know, drive back and forth to work. Well, when X amount of dollars for commuting back and forth to work doubles, right, that reduces the amount of money they have available to go out and do things like shop at Walmart for, you know, cool new decorations for the house, or, you know, a new stereo, a new Bluetooth speaker, you know, whatever money to spend at bars, restaurants, concerts. And so there was a slowdown of basically consumer goods being purchased because all the money was being shifted into gas. And when that happens, that load to truck ratio falls. Now you have a lower number of loads available per truck. And now, well, now the shippers aren't competing against each other. And there comes a point where when that number goes low enough, no longer is it shippers competing against each other for the next available truck. Then you have trucking companies competing against each other for the next available load. And so that starts the whole underbidding war, where one trucking company comes in and says, hey, we'll move it for this much, or hey, we'll move it for that much, and they're undercutting each other. And so you start seeing the rates go down. So while the fuel surcharge was going up, the overall shipping rate, what we call the line haul rate, was going down. And the effect was they kind of almost balanced each other out to where, yeah, you're getting more of a fuel surcharge for the extra money you're spending on fuel, but the overall shipping rate is dropping down, and the end result is this load is paying the same amount that it was paying before fuel went through the roof, price-wise. And, I mean, that's where I am, where, you know, there's a lot of loads on the load board that I'm using that, I'm not kidding you, they're paying the same damn thing they were paying 2 years ago. But my operating cost has dramatically increased during that time, which means I'm now making a lot less money off of those same runs than I used to. And, of course, when I say operating cost, I'm not just talking about fuel. Diesel exhaust fluid also went up. It used to be, you know, before the big diesel fuel skyrocket, diesel exhaust fluid was like $2.89 a gallon. It had been $2.89 a gallon for like 5 years, basically. It was pretty much a national standard. And all of a sudden it went up to $3.75, and ended up leveling out. You know, most places now are $4.15 to $4.29 a gallon on the diesel exhaust fluid. You know, so you're talking, that's not a double, but that's a pretty big jump on that cost, but it doesn't stop there. Like $300 tires or $600 tires now, you know, a $17 gallon of oil is now a $28 gallon of oil for your motor oil. And I mean, on down the list, I mean, you know, gear oil, hub oil, WD-40, literally everything that you've got to, you know, buy on a regular basis to keep the truck running, you know, has all, seemingly, a lot of them have doubled. A lot of them have close to doubled. Some have more than doubled. And whenever you see that, what are you seeing as, like, your overall operating costs? Let's just go back 1 year. What have you seen as far as arising your total operating costs, all things considered, from last March till now?
Well, you know, and from last March to now, back, you know, I was hauling out of Texas, and I got a dedicated run I do, and my average, I was getting about $9,500 for a week's trip, and a year later, I'm getting $9,200 for a week's trip. So the fuel surcharges went down because fuel's come down. You know, it takes forever to go up on the fuel surcharge, but whenever it starts dropping, I mean, it's right now. They want that fuel surcharge changed, like, right now. I did take a decrease, but then I had to quit hauling out of Texas just because of the availability of the truck and seeing these shippers where and the receivers who are holding trucks up. And everybody, you know, has heard the stories about the driver shortage. We've never had a driver shortage. What we had is a retention issue at the shipper and the receiver, where the last time that I hauled out of Texas, it cost me almost 7 hours of loading and unloading time that I shouldn't have had to endure. It should have been an hour, maybe an hour and a half max to load me, and the same amount of time to get me unloaded. You know, they perceive trucks as they need to wait there while they're getting unloaded so that they can do all this pallet counting and make sure all the product's there. But if the shipper seals the trailer and then the receiver unseals the trailer and there's no break in the seal or anything, the product's there or it's not. It's not on the driver, and it never, it shouldn't be. It should be a fast download. It's just like, you know, where you do OD and step deck and flatbed work. I mean, what's on your trailer is on your trailer. If it's not there, it's not there. I mean, if they ship five excavators on, you know, the mini excavators on your trailer, you arrive with five mini excavators. And, you know, they unload them and they sign the bills, you know. It's a complete different persona whenever it's going into a warehouse versus if it's going on the ground out in general public. And, you know, that's been the biggest fight with all the truckers is they allow the shippers and the receivers to take advantage of them. And I told them a couple weeks ago, I'm done hauling the loads out of Texas. They don't pay enough for one. And I was getting over $2 a mile coming out of Texas. But whenever you figure how much time I was investing in that load, it's not worth it to me to get to haul a $1,000 load and miss out on a $4,000 load because they took too long getting me unloaded. So, I mean, you have to make that business decision as an owner-operator. Is it cost-effective to screw with these shippers and receivers that's going to hold you up forever? And if you know that you're going to be going to one that's going to hold you there for 3 or 4 or 5 hours, how many times are you going to go back to it? You know, that you got to draw the line and not continue to jump in bed with them and haul to them. I mean, people know Walmart is an issue, so why keep hauling to Walmart? You know, everybody says, well, that's the only loads out there. And it's not. There's other loads out there you can haul. You just have to know your value and what it takes to haul them. Yeah, you might lose a little money, but yet you're going to make up for it by being able to get a load that day instead of sitting at a receiver spending all your time unloading. But, you know, back to the question, the difference between what I see financially is actually a lot. I've learned coming into this that you have to truck smarter and not harder. You know, everybody wants that long nose truck, that nice, beautiful Kenworth or Peterbilt. Them are great to have, but efficiency is not one of them with them. You know, you're taking a truck that's getting between 5 and 6 miles a gallon, and you're giving up a slant nose truck that's getting between 7 and 8 miles a gallon. And whenever you figure up just your fuel mileage difference in a week, if you run, you're making that truck payment on a T680 or a Freightliner. You're making that truck payment by saving fuel, and so you're actually putting more money into your pocket because you don't have to take money out of your pocket because you're not putting all of it into fuel. You know, everybody had everybody likes to see the black smoke rolling. My Volvo that I had, it was a truck that done that. It was a 565 Cummins, and it was deleted out. It was a power horse, and I gave a lot up transitioning over to this 2018 680, but yet what I'm saving in fuel justifies the truck payment, where I didn't have a truck payment on the Volvo, but the parts I couldn't get for the Volvo because they're on back order. I mean, it's like, and even with the 680s and stuff, there's a lot of parts out here that are common parts that should not be on back order, and they're 4 to 6 weeks out. And you take an owner-operator who schedules their time in, you know, my time into the house, I schedule it to where I should be able to run 30 weeks a year and then take the rest of the time off. And if I have to put down for 3 or 4 weeks waiting on parts, that's taken away from the time that I already had allocated to be at home. So then I've got to reshift my whole schedule so that I can get out here and run and make that money up. And that's what happens with owner-operators, and it's going to get worse, is they're going to be chasing their tail trying to make up for all the money lost. And it just doesn't work, you know. And you know, these brokers, whenever you get on the phone with them and they try and tell you that they've got hundreds of trucks lined up to haul this stuff, as an owner-operator with my own authority, I get emails all day long wanting me to come pull loads, wanting me to bid lanes, wanting me to what would be my rate if I was to haul this load from point A to point B. And so them to say that they've got trucks that's covering all this and truck availability, I think is a farce. I think that they're shopping it and they're telling drivers that, and drivers see all these trucks in the truck stops, and that their knee-jerk reaction is, well, I've got to haul it because otherwise somebody else will. And I think if drivers quit that mentality and just said, okay, we're going to let it sit, then those brokers would quit with that. I mean, you've got to – it's a capitalist system. You know, they're there to make money just like I'm there to make money. And if they're taken away from my mouth to make themselves fatter, then I'm going to start benching in. I want to figure out how to get into their pocket more so that I make more money. And, you know, I'm not out here – you know, one of the best sayings I've ever been told – I can go broke at home just as well as I can out here on the road. I don't need to be out here.
right.
You know, I've been taught by a lot of good truckers, and one of my best friends in trucking has always told me, steady income is worth more than chasing a load board. You know, whenever the load board's hot, you'll see every Tom, Dick, and Harry out here buying trailers and trucks to go make that dollar. And, you know, they're bragging because they're getting $3 and $4 and $5 and $6 a mile. But then whenever it goes to shit like it is right now, all those truck drivers are like, well, man, I just can't make it. I can't make it. That's because you chased the dollar until the dollar was gone, and now you don't have anything to fall back on. But if you look for that slow and steady pace of, instead of doing, you know, $3 to $4 or $5 a mile, if you just have a 2.25 or 2.50 mile run, you're going to be better off in the long run because it's constant and it's steady. And that's what drivers have to look at. You can't chase that big payday, and that big payday comes at a cost. And that's what drivers are in right now. It's costing them because they decided not to stick with that slow, steady pace. They wanted to go big and better. So,
well, yeah, that and the biggest mistake I see when the market does get hot and all of a sudden everybody gets in the game, of course,
yep,
truck prices and trailer prices, you know, start rising. And so you get a lot of these guys, they're like, oh, man, look how much money is, you know, the trucking industry is making right now. They'll run out. They'll pay $210,000 for a brand new Freightliner, right?
Yep.
And they'll pay, you know, $90,000 for a trailer, right? And now all of a sudden, you know, they're saddled with a $3,000 a month truck payment, and they've got a $1,500 a month trailer payment, right? Or even a $2,000 a month trailer payment. And then all of a sudden the market corrects and it comes back down, and all of a sudden they find out, I can't run these rates. not with this trailer price, you know.
Well, you know, I said on, you know, this truck here, I didn't give a fortune for it. And it's not the most uppity up class truck that you can buy out here neither, but it gets the job done. And it's a reasonably priced truck for the markets that we have today. You know, back a year and a half ago, I was going to buy my own trailer. I actually had a contract signed with a company that they leased trailers to Hirschenbach. And then as those trailers hit an age, they brought them back in, and then they sold them out and made money off of them. And they do the same with equipment. I signed a contract with them in September. I was supposed to have a trailer no later than the end of October. And it was around $60,000, it was right around $50,000, $60,000. within that time frame of less than a month, those trailers went from 50 to 60 to between 90 to 100,000. And this is a used trailer, 5 years old, with a reefer on it that had between 8,000 and 9,000 hours on it. And, you know, they jumped up that quick. And everybody would, you know, they had to have the trailer. They had to have it. They had to have it. And so they paid that ridiculous amount. I will not give that much money for a trailer whenever, you know, it wasn't but a year and a half ago, a brand new trailer like that was selling for $80,000 with a reefer setting on it. So, you know, whenever you go giving that much money for a new trailer, you can't even justify operating it. I mean, in
for a maintenance
power only. Yeah, from a maintenance, from any.
You're buying a maintenance liability. Yeah.
And
well,
you know,
I
even
gotta,
this
I
huge truck.
Just a second, Daniel. I got to interrupt you just a second here. I have to work a quick miracle. Okay.
Okay.
What we're going to do right now? We are about to resurrect somebody from the dead. I don't know if this has ever been done on internet radio or not, but we're going to resurrect somebody back from the dead, and his name is the voice of reason, Radio Daryl. Daryl, how are you tonight?
Daryl, smash. I'm good. Yeah. Oh, man. Woo, that was a long, day from, what's the day, Thursday? Yeah, Wednesday was a long day. Tuesday and the Wednesday.
Yeah, we're
long
on the
day.
Radio, so it's Thursday.
Yeah, there we go.
All right,
yeah, I'm good
so
now.
Catch you up to speed. All right, catch you up to speed here. We're talking about the owner and operator woes here for a couple more minutes. We got Daniel Doris on the line. Daniel, I don't know if you and Daniel have ever talked before. Daniel, do you realize it was right about a year ago today that you and I were hanging out and having drinks down in Galveston?
Yeah, you know, those memories pop up in your Facebook and my Google feeds and all that, and it's like, wow, you know, that's been that long ago?
It has been. My wife was so mad at me. Now, you know, we're both bikers. And so she was at home.
Uh-huh.
And the weather in northern Illinois was just, it was just shit. It was cold. It was gray. I think there was some snow. And I was down there, and one of those clusters happened. I was supposed to load out in Galveston on Friday and head back out of town. And instead what happened was a bridge inspector found some sort of defect on the I-45 bridge going into Galveston, right? And that's the only way in and out of Galveston is on that bridge. And immediately the state of Texas came in and they suspended all overweight loads from being able to cross that bridge until they were able to remedy whatever the defect was they found on the bridge. And so for like 90 days, there were absolutely no permit overweight loads coming out of the Port of Galveston. Naturally, I was scheduled to pick up an oversized overweight load out of the Port of Galveston that week, and it canceled. And then all the other available loads, because they were all oversized overweight loads coming out of Galveston, they all canceled. And so I ended up getting stuck in Galveston for the weekend. And I knew that there was about a 90% chance that good old Daniel Doris was probably going to be somewhere in Texas, because that's where he used to just hang out all the damn time. And so I called insurance yet. Daniel was on his way down. And so he came out. He met me in Houston. We ended up going to Galveston. I found a nice place. Daniel knew where I could go and told me where to go to park the truck right there by the beach. And, I ended up hanging out by the beach. I ended up going swimming. I did a whole TikTok video about the whole incident. And my wife was just pissed. She just knew that I had personally gone and engineered the defective bridge and everything else so that I could just hang out in Galveston and drink with my buddy Daniel and go swimming in the Gulf.
I remember that. You know, I was on my way down there, and it's on a Friday, and I get this phone call from Chris, and he's like, dude, he's like, I'm stuck down here in Texas. They've got the port shut because nothing can come across. It's overweight, no OD loads. And he's like, is there anything I can go do? And I was like, if I was stuck in Houston, Texas, I would find a place to drop my trailer, and I'd be in Galveston because that's where I've been down there. I go down there several times, you know. And he calls me. I finally get down there, and he did. He found this kick-ass place right next to a hotel, big lot, free parking for semis, as long as it's not bike week down there, or they got some big event going on. And it's less than probably 100 yards from the beach, or, you know, from the water. And great restaurant right down the strip there. Of course, we did find out you can't order enough beer because if you get too much, they cut you off.
What do they call it? The 100 or the yard or something like that. It was literally like this 3-foot-tall tube full of beer in this refrigerated dispenser. So it was like you had your own tap right there at the table. I don't know. It was like a gallon and a half or something of beer. I don't know. I wanted to order one of those because I'd only seen them like on TV and in movies. I'd never actually had a chance to order one. And so I ordered one. And it was just me and Daniel at the table, and they brought the damn thing out. And then as soon as they brought it out, they came back and said, those require a minimum of 3 guests to order. We can't give it to you if there's only 2 of you here. And so they brought it to us, and then they took the damn thing back.
And not only that, but I'd already ordered a pitcher. And so we not only had that big one, we also had a pitcher there. And they're like, yeah, you guys got too much alcohol at your table. So, you know, me and Chris were both big old boy, you know. And I know they just kind of looked at us. They was really hoping they was going to get their beer back. And, you know, it was just one of those things. Unless you ever been down there, you just,
up.
I mean.
You mean you didn't tell them that you were beer man Bikerson?
They didn't care. They really didn't. But I was sitting there. I was in Doc Holliday mode. I wasn't in Bikerson the Beer Man mode. I'm in Doc Holliday mode, and I'm like, nonsense. I have not yet begun to defile myself.
I mean, they even monitored, like, whenever, you know, where the restaurant was at, there was a bar right next to it that was part of it. And we ended up going to the bar, and they was counting our drinks at the bar. And holy crap.
That's what it was called. It was called The Spot.
Yeah.
Not that it mattered. I mean, they could have cut us off and we could have walked, you know, 50 yards to the next big restaurant and bar. I mean, they're all up and down the strip there. But I'm going to sit here, and what I'm going to do now is I'm going to get to Brian's story here on what happened with him in his owner-operator days. But first, I'm going to go to Daryl. Daryl, I know you've been sitting there patiently listening to us talk about how much we drink and all that. So Daryl, how's your week going?
Let's see. It's going all right, other than I'm recovering. And my shoulder is kicking my butt. But, yeah, these loads out here are kind of sparse now because I just offloaded, and I spent quite some time trying to find something, and like old boy was saying, what's his name? Friend there, that's what I'm saying.
Daniel,
how you doing, Daniel?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's crazy how the trailer, how all these prices went up. Thanks, Joe Biden, you fucker. That you know, like you said, you know, trailers that was only they're you know, like maybe 70,000, 80,000, all of a sudden they're 100,000. And I'm like, wait a minute, it's a used trailer. It didn't go up that fast, but, you know, Biden's world kind of screwed everything over. But, no, I'm out here busting butt. You know, I love what I do. I got my 2000 Peterbilt. I'm rebuilding it. You know, about it, and she had some issues. You know, never buy a truck from Dusty, Ohio. And, you know, I love what I do. You know, I got a lot of pride in Barb and sharing with people on Facebook what I do and the people that I meet. But I run ag stuff. I used to do reefers a long time ago. And now since I do ag, I run a hopper. I won't go to a reefer ever, never again, or a van never, ever again, because I like being around people and not trying to shove them in a suitcase and tell them to go piss. I want to load my truck, or they told everybody to show up at the same time at 6 a.m. You got 20 trucks at 6 a.m. for the same bag on meeting, and then they go eeny, meeny, miny, moe, which one they want to choose. But let me, but other than that, no, I'm kicking butt. I love what I do. I got to run down here to Pocahontas, Arkansas, pick up a load there and head it, and take it back to Purina, take it back home, chill out for a day or two, and then do it all again. But no, other than that, I'm good. I'm glad to be here. I missed y'all.
Now, just out of curiosity, now, are you running the ag exemption with the hopper, or are you doing all legal? Or?
It depends on what I pick up. There's times where I can run the ag exemption, and there's a lot of times I can't. So,
okay.
It depends on like, what I'm picking up now, I can't run it.
Yeah, I know I talked to several guys about it, and of course,
uh-huh.
A lot of people think I'm stupid about it. But, you know, all honesty, what, you know, everybody's putting in for these exemptions and everything right now. Why don't the truck drivers who are delivering into these metropolitan areas, why don't we put in an exemption and try and get us to where we've got at least a 50-mile radius within, you know, any metropolitan of 250,000 or better? And that way you can and deliver – And you've got time to get back out so that you're not having to use personal conveyance or safe haven. I mean, and
I like
let's
that.
Face it, these DOT officers are cracking down. And if you have personal conveyance on your deal, they'll put it under a microscope wanting to know why, when, you know, what was you doing, you know, did it really take you that long to do it? You know, it's a bunch of nonsense.
Now, hold on. You know the answer to that, right, Daniel?
What's that?
Do you know the answer? No, whenever they start examining your personal conveyance use and they start asking you where you were going and why, you know the automatic answer to that, right?
Yeah, it's personal.
No.
It's called personal conveyance.
There's a better answer. And every DOT officer, will automatically accept this. Where were you going? And the answer is your mama's house.
Damn. Yeah, they'll accept it all right. With a backup.
That'll make you rich. Just make sure
you have
the phone recording. Make sure you have the phone recording when they start beating you with a nightstick.
Right.
I don't have to worry about that craziness.
I was going to say, that only works if you've got an RGN or something like that.
An RGN.
Yeah.
Tell them that you're on the way to pick her up.
I think they need to get rid of those stupid electronic logbooks. They need to get rid of electronic logbooks and get rid of automatics, because ever since they got automatics, they just put any daggone Yahoo behind the wheel. They can't even speak freaking English. Can't even spell English. But these big companies are putting them behind the wheel. They need to get rid of automatics and get rid of electronic logbooks and let people start using their damn heads and not try to figure it out. If you can't think, then you don't need to be driving the damn truck.
Well, I think these training tools are pushing them through too much. I mean, you know, they're trying to paper mill them through to where they don't get any time training. You know, I've got an automatic. Personally, I love it. I mean, if you're sitting in New York City in a traffic jam, it's an S-based thing since sliced bread and Velcro. My E-log, I hated the E-log, but it holds me to a standard that I actually get to where I need to be at a little bit quicker, and I can personal convey around and do whatever I want to do whenever I get there. And I mean, I run paper for 2 years on my own. Question too much about it anymore. If you're on paper and it's accepting the exempt motor exemption anymore, it, you know, that's one of the bad things about trucking. Would I recommend trucking to someone that's up and coming and looking to buy a truck and become an owner operator? Hell no. Stay away from trucking. Find you a nice union job around the house that pays your bills, bust your ass, and go to work 9 to 5 or 8 to 6 or whatever you have to do, and stay plumb the hell away from trucking, because all it is nothing but a bunch of heartache. And I mean, all you have is people out here lined up, their hands out, wanting money from you, whether it's the beggars on the street or the capital people out there in D.C. wanting your money.
Yeah, whatever. Thanks, buddy.
Silence fills the air.
All right, right on.
I mean,
I want to move the point along just a little bit. And what I'd like to do right now, now Daniel is what they would call an independent trucker, meaning he has his own numbers, his own motor carrier authority. And there's a difference between being an independent trucker and being an owner-operator. An independent trucker, they're literally registered as a motor carrier, and as such, now they have some additional liability when it comes to things like lawsuits, insurance, et cetera. They are registered as their own trucking company with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, the FMCSA, also known as the Gestapo. And basically, they have no safety nets. They operate 100% financially on their own outside of securing lines of credit. Now, an owner-operator, you can be an independent owner-operator, or you can be an owner-operator that is leased on or contracted. So they're referred to as leased operators or contractors. And when you're a contractor, that basically means in the trucking business, you own the truck. You might own the truck. You might own the truck and the trailer. You might own the truck and lease the trailer, rent the trailer. You have a trucking business, but it's not its own motor carrier. And what you do is you sign a contract. You are contracted to a registered motor carrier, and you work out some sort of in the contract, it outlines what kind of percentages of the revenue that you take as the owner of the truck. Just a lot of things like that. You still have to have, there's still insurance requirements you have to meet, but there's a big difference between having truck insurance versus motor carrier insurance, because when you get motor carrier insurance, you are insuring your company as a registered trucking, as a registered truck line, basically, versus an owner-operator that contracts on, they have what's essentially the same as like you would have an insurance policy on your car. They have an insurance policy on their truck that's strictly prohibited to anything that their truck might be involved in as far as an accident, et cetera. And so that's the difference. Now, the terms there, the motor carrier, you know, they'll usually take a decent chunk because they have to cover their administrative costs, right, for that additional liability that they carry, because they're not just penalized for one individual truck. The registered motor carrier is liable for its entire fleet, meaning every truck operating under their license, whether that truck is a contractor, whether it is a hired employee driver, they carry financial liability for every truck operating under their motor carrier number. So that's the difference between an owner-operator as opposed to an independent owner-operator or an independent motor carrier. But now that we've kind of got some of that out of the way, Brian, I'm going to bring Brian back. What's that?
Oh, I was saying, or an easy way of saying that is the people who are leasers, basically, and I hate to say it like this, but they're glorified company trucks because they don't have the freedom. Like, I have my own authority, so I'm independent. I can do what the hell I want. Unfortunately, people are leased to a company, you're binded there because you have to use their fuel card, their plate, go by their rules. But like you said, you own the truck and maybe you own the trailer.
I don't go with the glorified definition. The reason being, I know, like, for example, it's basically in the business world, it's equivalent to being a franchisee, okay?
Yeah.
When you go to McDonald's, there's a lot of McDonald's out there that are independently owned. They're not corporate owned. Someone had to invest a lot of money in order to open a McDonald's that they own. McDonald's is a franchisee. They have rules. You have to participate in their campaigns and promotions. If they say the McRib is only 99 cents this month, by God, you have to charge 99 cents for the McRib that month. Like, they have some pricing control.
Yep.
You have to follow their regulations, their uniform code. Your store has to be set out. It's literally the same thing as someone who is leased onto a carrier. It's just it's a different business model. But at the end of the day,
yeah,
it is a business model. And if you are a truck owner, you're not, I mean, you can sign a lease to a company, but if you don't like what's going on there, you can say, hey, this isn't working out. I'm going to go ahead and, you know, break this lease agreement. And there's some sort of provisions in your contract. There might be a penalty for doing that or what have you. But you can take your truck and say, yeah, I'm not happy here. I'm taking my truck to another company, or I'm going to take my truck and I'm going to go, you know, and open my own authority or whatever. You still have the freedom to do that. Now, trucking is a little bit more restrictive,
yep,
than a lot of other industries. For example, when I was in towing, I owned a tow truck. I had my own authority through the state for my towing company, but I also had multiple contracts. I was contracted out to AAA, for example, to provide towing services for them. I was a subcontractor to the city of Chicago. I had contracts with three different salvage auto yards that would buy wrecked cars and have them towed in, and they would, you know, park them out and rebuild cars and sell them to car dealerships, whatever. And so I had multiple contracts. But then I also had, like, my own customer base, people that would come to me directly for tows. So, I mean, it's a little bit different. But when you're leased to a one motor carrier, you are typically confined, at least while you're operating underneath their authority. You are confined to basically, you're beholden to them. Now,
yep,
some carriers, you can go out, you can actually, one carrier I was leased on with, we had 5 pages of brokering companies, freight brokering companies, that already had an existing contract, an existing, what they call a packet. They already had an existing contract with this motor carrier for hauling freight. So I had the ability to go through literally dozens, probably well over 100, couple hundred maybe, different brokerages and arrange loads through them. I could even negotiate what rates I was going to move their freight for. The only catch was, because I wasn't the motor carrier, you know, once we had made an agreement on a price, that packet for that load had to go through my motor carrier's office. But I did that pretty frequently, and it was no big deal. They already had packets on file with them. They were already set up to do business with them. I'd call the broker. If we came to an agreement on the terms for how much that load was going to move for, they would simply call over to my coordinator office, and he would answer the phone, and he would do up the rate con and all that stuff. I would get a copy of it. But without going into all that, Brian was an owner-operator who was a contractor to a heavy haul company. And he was a contractor in the heavy haul business right around the time that that the fuel prices started going out of control. And that was coupled with the labor shortage, which Daniel kind of hit on, that during the labor shortage, you had a lot of issues. So, Brian, I'm going to let you go ahead and take it from here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience and what ultimately ended up happening to you within the last 12 months in this business?
Well, I'll go back just a little bit before that because it kind of sets up pretty well for what happened. Because I know what the normal stereotypical thing is. You know, you get somebody in there that doesn't know what the hell they're doing. They, you know, go out and buy all this chrome and crap like that, can't pay the bill. There you go, you're out of business. That's not what happened. I had been an owner-op for about 5-6 years before. I actually owned my own truck, my own trailer. Things weren't always, you know, we weren't eating T-bone steaks at the house, but, you know, we were comfortable. And I looked at it more of a view of I'm not out here to make a whole bunch of money. I wanted to go this route because I had one, and then another one came along, two little boys at the house, and I wanted to be have the ability to basically, like, no, I'm not working this week. I'm not working that week. You kiss my ass. And if they said anything, it's like, well, I'm paying for the truck. I'm paying for the fuel. And at one point in time, I had the truck and trailer both paid off, so it's like, I'm paying for the fuel. What are you going to do, fire me? Try. So that's where that came from. So a couple of years after I got all that stuff squared away with, I was either looking to change what I was doing or get my own numbers, and I was kind of a toss-up between one or the other. I've always wanted to do heavy haul. At that point in time, I was doing heavy steel, and when I say heavy steel, you know, I know where all the scale houses are in a particular region of the country, and there's a reason I know that. I also know creative methods. So to give you an idea, so sold the truck, sold my trailer, bought another truck because this other company required a newer truck. One that I had was an old mechanical Peterbilt, beautiful truck, ran great, and had no complaints. But this other company wanted one that you could put a tattletale in. So buy this new truck, used, of course. And for the first couple months, things were going pretty well, you know, able to send some money home, able to go home on occasion, and things were going well. And then right about December, November on into February, things just started getting really tight for us. Didn't help that the damn truck seemed to want to go down every couple miles, and the fuel prices went up. And, I mean, I keep track of all of my numbers. Right now, I ended up having to get out of that situation. I'm nothing more than a stupid company driver, if you will. I still keep track of my fuel mileage and the operation costs as best as I can of this truck. I'm not required to at all. I'm not on the dime for any of it, but I like to know the numbers. That's just the way that my brain works. And operating costs kept going up and up and up and up, and it was just nothing I could do. My wife finally tells me in June, this is last June, obviously, we're not in June yet, that we have a problem. And she sits me down and we look at the numbers and so on and so forth. She wasn't telling me because, you know, she's trying to make sure I, you know, focused on work. But I was something like 3 months behind on everything. And that truck, and to keep the truck operational, all of that stuff came first. So you have a truck payment was paid, the fuel bill was paid, and all that stuff was, but we were 3 months behind on our house payment, on our car. We had basically cut everything out of our budget that we did not absolutely need. And in some cases, some things we absolutely needed, we still ended up figuring out a way to cut that. Going back and looking at everything, you know, it's like Chris was saying, you know, revenue stayed the same or even dropped in some instances, but the expenses just kept climbing and climbing and climbing. And I never could get a reason for that or so on and so forth, but it wasn't that I was picking the bad loads, you know. Chris was talking about, you know, he was able to go through brokerages and such like that. The last company I was leased to, they would let us go through brokerages. And I remember I was sitting over there in Washington State, and there was just nothing on our board. I just could not find anything that was going to move. And so finally somebody told me, well, we've got a load that's 1,200 miles away. Why don't you deadhead to go pick that up? Of course, I'm going to eat that cost. Oh, and by the way, it only moves at a, you know, 80 cents a mile once you pick it up. You've got to be out of your mind. You want me to deadhead 1,200 miles, pick up a load that's paying 80 cents a mile, and at this point in time, my fuel expenses are about 70 cents a mile, and take that somewhere? You've got to be out of your mind. So I dug through the load boards that I could find, found a load that actually paid significantly better than that, covered not only the cost of the load moving, but actually put money back into my pocket even after everybody got their cut and did it that way. I don't know. I think part of the problem was that a lot of these brokerages, we don't know what they're getting paid. And I'm not one of those guys, like, I want to know every dime you make, but, you know, some of these guys are getting $5,000-$6,000 to move a load, and then they call, you know, a truck driver and say, hey, can you move this load for $1,000? Well, why the hell are you pocketing $4,000 and you're only giving $4,000 and you're only giving this driver $1,000? Like, something's not right here. I'm not saying nobody, you know, that the brokerage shouldn't make money off of it, but it seems to me that if I'm the one risking my property, my life, and it's me that's actually doing most of the work, maybe I should get most of the money. I think that's one of the things that we're going to have to figure out sometime here pretty quick when it comes to this whole nonsense when it comes to brokerages, is we've got to get some transparency with it. By the way, Daryl, if you would like a load,
yeah.
I'm sitting under one right now that I'm more than happy to give you.
Nope, because mine is made a lot better than what you've been saying. So, heck no. I like what I do.
The one that I'm getting right now, it's paying a hell of a lot better than what I was getting paid. But I'm just saying, you come pick this load up, I can go home.
No. I got my load I got to pick up. And see, I'm kind of the opposite of you because me, I love what I do. I love being an owner operator. If somebody asks me to do it, I'll tell them in a heartbeat, don't buy a new truck. Don't do it. I would buy a used truck and put some money into it. But, I mean, but I'm running ag, so it's a whole different world. And my broker, it took me a little bit to find good brokers. Yeah, I went through my broker stupidity where, you know, I'm looking at a load board, and then a broker comes along and he says, I have this product for you to move, and it's still on the load board, and they knocked down $5-$10. I went with another broker where we were running road salt at one time, and the guy that I was running road salt for, I mean, I made some ridiculous money, but then another broker comes around. I'm not going to say the name of them. They came around and they knocked off $20 a ton. And I even questioned it to them. So a lot of it is, you know, trying to find the right brokers because I have a real good – I have two brokers that I use, and they are freaking – they're awesome. And at the same time, I look for my own freight too. So – and then, you know, like you said, it is hard because, you know, we got rising fuel costs. The parts are ridiculously high, and you're right about that. But at the same time, I'm getting my bills paid. There's times where I had to wonder what's going on. And one good thing is networking. Networking saved my ass more than a couple of times. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong too. So my numbers are doing good. I mean, I'm happy. I love what I do. Could I make more money? Yeah, definitely. But right now, you know, for the position I'm in, and not my truck is not a pretty truck. I love my 2000P. Does it have work to do on it? Yes, I got work to do on it. but I know what's wrong with it. I know the work that's done to it, and it's not a new truck that got all this electronic BS in it and all that. I got a 3406 Cat. She runs. The horsepower is up on it. Her fuel mileage is doing pretty good, doing a lot better when it was a 4.25. I got my 18 speeds. You know, she scrolls down the road, and, you know, but I'm smart. I got to be smart about the loads I pick, because I got to look at loads where I got to make so much per mile. If I don't make it, I'm not going to run it. Now, there's times where I'm going to have to bite the bullet, where I'm going to have to take a load that's going to pay for my fuel, but then I get a higher load, which is going to pay for a lot of other stuff. Yeah, you got to play that game, and, you know, I think I do it pretty well. You know, is there room for improvement? Yeah, always. But if somebody asks me about being an owner operator, I can't go back to driving a company truck. I'm too much to being on my own, and I love what I do. And, you know, but I do tell people, if you're going to do this, you cannot. As soon as you get paid, the first thing you think, I'm going to go spend money and buy all this bling and buy a new car and buy all this lights on my truck and this and that. It does not work that way. The money you make, I will tell everybody, the money you make, you'll hold on to it, because you're going to have to use it somewhere down the road to fix your truck. Your income tax, you know what, take some of that, use it for you, but invest it back into the company, because it's a constant circle, you know. And If you don't spend your money wisely, yeah, it's going to bite you. And, again, I had some good people in my life that helped me out where they didn't, I wouldn't have a truck. But, you know, God graces, I was able to do it. And also, I have my insurance from the military, which saved my butt, because when I had my shoulder surgery, there's nothing for me to rebound on. I don't have Aflac. I don't have any insurance that says, hey, you know, for the time that you're out, we'll cover you. You know, you can't even do unemployment, because I'm my own person. So, yeah, is there downfalls to it? Now, am I busting butt to catch up? Yeah, I'm going to have to catch up. I was off for 6 weeks. There was no money coming in. So, yeah, I'm going to have to bust butt, catch up at the same time. You know, if the truck breaks down, got to take care of it. But, no, I love being in the ag world. You know, don't get it wrong. This is not easy. It's not easy. It's dirty. And we have a lot of deadheading to do at times. But I love the people. I love the farmers. I love everybody that I come to. They come to you, and they're happy to see you. They don't have an attitude. So, you know, it's just out on how you look at things, you know.
Right. Well, and I understand. No, and I get that. So, well, like when I was running Steel, all of the customers I went to, I had a pretty good relationship with them and so on and so forth. And like you said, you know, when you get that settlement, when you get paid out, you don't run to Iowa 80 and throw a bunch of chrome onto it. You
right.
Can't do that. Old Peterbilt that I had, I ended up having to rebuild the engine twice, because I bought it towards the end of its life, and rebuilt the engine once. Mechanics screwed something up, and so ended up it was an old mechanical, so the fuel advance on the front of it. If you know anything about 3406 B model Cats, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. A lot of people call them the boob. Well, there's a timing advance on that, the mechanical fuel timing advance. Well, somebody didn't put the pin back in. And so after about 5,000 miles on that rebuild, it slipped, and it was just dumping fuel. And I didn't know you could actually melt 5 out of the 6 cylinders or pistons in that engine, and it would still run. But I'm here to tell you, I know for a fact you can do that now. I don't recommend it. So I ended up having to rebuild the engine again. And, you know,
that happened to me.
I was able to absorb the cost, you know, and then it wasn't too long after that I decided to switch fields, if you will. I mean, I'm still doing flatbed, but decided to switch fields, and that's when everything just kind of went to hell for me, is that new truck. I think my operating costs January, first month. My operating cost last January was $20,000, and I ran the truck 2 weeks. That's because it spent so much time in the damn shop for this and that and the other and this and that, and it's just like, you know, there's only so many times you can get towed 80 miles because there's literally no dealership around you. And I mean, that it just adds up. And that's what did it to me. It wasn't that I had chrome everywhere. And I'm not saying that that's what you were saying, and I'm not trying to, you know, argue that.
Right.
Hell, Chris stole my truck. I mean, when it came time to give the thing a bath, it was in my front yard, sprayed off with a hose and wash it off. Like, I'm not going to the street and beacon for it. I'm not paying $50 for that. I'm too cheap for that. You know, so that, yeah, it's just, I don't know. Some aspects of the industry are really, really great. Some aspects are just terrible. Currently what I'm doing, I know what these loads are paying that I'm on, and I'm still doing oversized. This load's paying amazing, but that's partly because it's very, very particular company, and they're very meticulous and very exacting on certain things. You know, that and nobody wants to drag something that's over height across the country coming out of New Jersey. You sure I can't convince you to take this load for me?
I don't have a problem dragging something over height across the country. It's that whole New Jersey part I have a problem with.
Yeah, I'm not a king of Jersey. No, I don't like.
Yeah, if you've never ran an oversized load through New Jersey, folks, let me tell you, you don't know what you're missing.
I would say it definitely takes you and fun, but see, that was my whole mentality. I mean, you know, everybody here, you know, has a little bit of experience doing X, Y, and Z. I remember my grandpa told me years and years and years ago, if you want to get paid better than everybody else, you better do something better than everybody else, i.e., do something other people can't. So that's why I started hauling the heavy steel, and that's why I went to oversize, because who the hell wants that headache? You know, I'm out of New Jersey now, but I mean, I'm sitting over here. I can't leave till 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, because there's a restriction. So I got to sit here and twiddle my thumbs. Well, that just means that I have to run my ass off all day tomorrow to make up for the time I'm sitting twiddling my thumbs till 9 o'clock. You know, it's one of those things. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, this helps me with my military. So I'm still serving. So it gets me home in time.
Well, that is one of the things I regret is getting out when I did. I wish I could have stayed in.
If I can just cut in, we got a pretty good group here. We still got I think four of us on the line. Yep. So I'm going to take us to something we do now and then on the show, which is a quick roundtable discussion of some of the current events. And so basically limit your responses, you know, to around 1 to 2 minutes. But I wanted to get at least a little bit into the current economy. And I don't know if you guys are aware or not. The banks, as of yesterday, over in Europe, the European Union yesterday halted trading basically on most of the banks as far as stock trading. And of course we know we've seen a lot of big bank failures, and I'm linking basically the trucking industry and the troubles we're having. It's not just us, you know, it's not just us poor, you know, redneck, Clayton Bigsby, hillbilly truckers out here running his owner operators that are having financial problems. Yeah, that was a dig at you, Daryl. And now we're seeing the big banks. I mean, Silicon Valley Bank had something like $275 billion in deposits before they tumbled. Okay, so these are multi-hundred billion dollar banks that are going under right now. So it's not just the little guy anymore. the economic woes are hitting everybody from the poor people who can't even come up with enough money to put gas in their car to drive to their minimum wage job, to the middle class people, right? They're you know, inflation's hitting them. The small business owners are getting hit big time. And now we're even seeing the millionaires and the billionaires, and we won't even – well, you know, actually, we're going to get into this. All right, so the millionaires and billionaires even are being affected now. We're seeing banks go under. I guess a fifth bank went under today. I don't recall what bank that is off the top of my head. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about the banks going under. Daniel, what are your thoughts on the banks that are going under right now?
Phil, I from what I've seen, like the Silicon Valley Bank that went under, and some of the other banks that are going under, I hate to say it, but it's their own doing. I think their CEOs are being tipped off. They're being allowed to have this free pass by our government. And our government's helping them bail out when they shouldn't be. And, we've got to stop giving out the free money. Everybody's like, well, the government's covering it, you know, it'll be all right. That money's only free until it's gone, and then there's no more money. And right now we've got a checkbook that has a negative balance, but yet we keep wanting to write checks on it, and we can't do that.
Exactly. Daryl, what are your thoughts on the banking situation?
Well, you know, I feel the same way. You know, everybody's talking about free money, and I'm like, okay, and like we always said, nothing's free. I think it's a bigger issue, too, because I think they're trying to figure out the way to try to squeeze this new world order in, so they're trying to mess up everything that they can. I mean, we have an administration that's this is the most irresponsible administration that we have ever had, but yet they're able to trick people to thinking that they're the greatest things in sliced bread. So it's just and the people that's really getting hurt is the hardworking people who are poor, people that live in low income housing and all that. I mean, hardworking Americans, they're the one who's getting messed up on this. And you know, and I agree with old boy, you know. This is their own damn causing. I mean, you've seen some of them, Silicon Valley, they were doing illegal trades, and then they end up getting caught. So they shouldn't get bailed out. So, you know, we got to straighten that mess out.
All right. Brian, now you and I talked about this earlier, and you had kind of an interesting reference to the crypto markets, and you kind of tied that to the bank. What are your thoughts on the banking situation?
Well, I got two thoughts, so I'll try to be quick. First one that you alluded to, the fact that number one in this country, the two banks that went under, or two of the banks that went under, are the two biggest banks that deal with crypto. Now, the government is trying to get a hold of this crypto, and I'm not talking about like what the government's trying to do with crypto. I'm talking about like the Bitcoin, the dog coin, and all that other fancy stuff, the stuff that I don't understand. But these two banks were the two that dealt with all of that stuff. And they're the ones that go under? It sounds suspicious to me. That's the first problem that I have with all this. But I want to drag everything back to first principles if I can. Jackson had it right. Jefferson and Jackson both had it right. Central banks are terrible. We should have never allowed Aaron Burr shot Hamilton about 15 years too damn late. We have a problem. Yep. We need to end the Fed wholesale. Stop it. Because as long as they have control of our money, we will keep going through this again and again and again. We went through it in 2008. We went through it in the early 90s and the early 80s and the 70s. I'm starting to see a pattern here. We have a problem. Let's end the Fed.
That's a good point. Okay, now let's move on to the next roundtable here. So 200 million gallons or something crazy like that of hazardous materials. And that might be an exaggeration. That seems like an exaggeration. How about this? A metric shit ton of hazardous materials get spilled from a derailed train in East Palatine, Ohio, resulting in a huge environmental crisis, toxic clouds after they burned off. They decided to burn off these toxic chemicals and then told everybody that everything was fine. I don't understand that because, I mean, quite frankly, if that's not an environmental concern, why do we even have the EPA? But I digress. It takes them 2 weeks. It takes the Biden administration 2 weeks before they even acknowledge or go public and start talking about it. Then Silicon Valley Bank goes down. A bunch of California millionaires and billionaires, by the way, huge donors to the Democratic Party. Silicon Valley Bank is coming out now, had donated $73 million to the Black Lives Matter movement, which now is being exposed by Candace Owens as basically being a huge ripoff. Within 24 hours, there is a Biden administration intervention into that situation. And of course, East Palestine, Ohio, over there in that area, largely red voters, most of them, I think it was something like 84% voted for Trump or something like that, which might explain why there was the initial denial of federal aid to help remedy that situation. Daniel, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, again, it goes right back to just the constant money handout. I mean, we've got to stop the bleeding of all the money going out because there's no money to be given out. Whether people think they need it for free education or health care or whatever you want to call it, whenever your budget is in the negative and you keep driving that negative budget deeper and deeper, I mean, where does it stop? And right now they have no, you know, here we are with another almost $7 trillion budget that Sleepy Joe wants to go with. We can't. I mean, they'll never shut the government down. And that's people, the Democrats and Republicans both, placate the fear of a potential shutdown of the government. The government will never shut down because then you have all those people out there who will not get their paycheck. And whenever you have 565 grumpy people that don't get a paycheck, they don't care about whether grandma or grandpa that's been on Social Security gets a paycheck or whether, Joe Blow in the military gets his paycheck. But whenever they don't get their paycheck, something's going to change. So, I mean, again, it just drives back. We've got to stop the foolish spending.
And, I have to agree. The government's never going to shut down for more than a day or two. Because, quite frankly, if the government shut down, everybody would figure out a way to operate without the government. And, quite frankly, their biggest damn fear is us figuring out how to operate without them. They can't have that happen. Brian, let's talk about it. East Palestine, Ohio response versus the Silicon Valley response. Go.
Well, first and foremost, I'm from Ohio, not from that area of the country. And for the most part, yeah, Ohio's pretty damn red for the most part. It does seem very interesting that a bunch of guys who generally speak and believe in getting up before the sunrise, put their boots on to go make a living. Well, we don't have money to help them, but we have money to help all these yuppies who don't know what a shovel is and how to actually work. And I shouldn't say it that way because it does sound mean. But you know, if what was it, Kanye West or one of those rappers could say that George Bush doesn't like black people and that's why Katrina happened, I think it's only fair to say Democrats must not like white people and that's why East Palestine happened. Mm-hmm. I mean,
oh.
I don't know that that's accurate. And well, yeah. But as far as these train companies, you know, they made their own damn bed. They got in bed with the government. They begged them for help and handouts and so on and so forth more than 100 years ago. They did this to themselves. This is a 100-year disaster in the making. The government's just as culpable as a Norfolk Southern. And frankly speaking, nobody's too big to fail, including the banks, the railroad company, or Joe Biden. So I say we stop bailing them out because I'm sick and tired of being on the hook for everybody's bad mistakes. If I've got to pay for mine, they've got to pay for theirs. Let them fail.
I back you on that. I think the whole point of the Sherman Antitrust Act is to prohibit, to keep companies from becoming too big to fail. If a company is so big that they take up such an enormous part of the economy that their failure to properly manage their finances poses a threat to the entire nation, or in some situations, the entire global economy, then it's time to enact the global the Sherman Antitrust Act and force these companies to break up into smaller companies competing against each other. All right, Daryl, God help us. What are your thoughts on East Ohio versus Silicon Valley?
It's a complete freaking mess. And like you said, I mean, it's mostly red, so they purposely slow the process down. They don't give a shit. And oh boy, he's right. The railroad, they jumped in bed with the feds, so they get what they deserve. You know, they need to be held responsible. And just like what's going on in Ohio, the reason they didn't hear a lot about it is because who was the major stockholders in that? You know, those major stockholders of the train station, they are also the major stockholders of some of the news media there. So there's a mess up. Another point that I forgot who said it, but people, you gotta quit depending on the government to have your damn free money, because all this stuff is just based on pure ignorance. This, I hate Joe Biden. I don't like him. You know, I didn't vote for him, and I'm still black, and I will always be black. It's just this man does not care about simple people. He does not care about American people. He does not care about corporations. The man hasn't done nothing right since he's been in the Senate. Since he's been in politics, he's done nothing right, and this includes this. You know, we got to get our senses back to hardworking, making good decisions, good money decisions, and being responsible for ourselves and not waiting for the government to bail us out.
All right, there you go. Good oratory there. And, I think this, better than anything, demonstrates the absolute bias that the Uniparty, and I'm going to call them the Uniparty, that includes the Democrats, it includes the Rhino Republican, which I think now at this point comprise most of the Republican Party. You've got the Rhinos that aren't afraid, you know, to basically just come right out and be openly Rhino. Then you've got the Republicans that go out and they throw a great show, you know, to demonstrate that they're not rhinos. But then when you look at their voting records, they are. And then there's a very, very small minority of the Republican Party that actually stands on principle and calls out everything that's wrong with the establishment. You know, people like Matt Gaetz that, you know, they're for real, but they are such a small minority, not just of their own party, but when you look at the rhinos that are working with the Democrats in the background, you know, it's one big show of political theater. And we're kind of doomed. But anyhow, I would like to thank Daniel and Brian both for coming on tonight and sharing their experiences with us. Guys, I'm going to go ahead and move both of you over to the headset now, and we're going to move on. Believe it or not, it has already, the time has arrived. We're going to move on to our final thoughts for the evening. And so, Daryl, everything we've talked about, I realize you weren't here for like the first half of the show, but, you know, go ahead and give us your final thoughts for the evening on how you think, how do you think things are going? You know, is the house of cards coming down? Have the people in the glass house cast enough stones that it's going to come back and bite them? Or are they still running such an effective game that they're just going to keep getting away with everything they've been getting away with? What do you think?
I think sooner or later they're going to stop getting away with it. People, the American people are beginning to start waking up. Unfortunately, you have those. No matter what kind of facts you do, no matter how much you try to wake them up and tell them the government is not for you, they don't care. They're too brainwashed. I forgot who it was, but we have them talking about they want to invade Mexico. Why? You know, we have a drug problem that's here. We got people dealing with fentanyl. And the only thing the cartel is doing, and I do not agree with the cartel. You know, that is a menace that needs to be wiped off the face of the earth. You know, unfortunately, Mexico is something they got to deal with. But we're trying to go over there to another country and dictate to them what they're doing, but we don't have enough nerve to go ahead and tell the American people, it's like, look, we got to get you guys off this drug. We instead of doing overdose centers and stupid clean needle crap, we need to work on prevention and helping them stay off of drugs, and then also working on their mental health. After we start doing that, then, you know what, if Mexico needs help, let's go ahead and help them. Because the cartels got a lot of their arms from who? Us. Why? Obama. And that's a whole different thing to go into. It's just this administration has gone off the rails. They have done nothing right. Zero. Only thing they done right was cause division. Only thing they done right was make us poor. The only thing they done right is just totally mess up everything. There's no reason we should have open borders. There's no reason that our fuel prices should be this high. There's no reason why anybody should be saying, well, do I have to buy food or do I have to pay my electric bill or my heating bill? This has gone way beyond bullshit, you know, and they need to be – and all these people, the problem we're having is all these people that cause all this mess, including the big bankers, people that are in the political office, these rhinos and everybody else that are dishonest, the problem is they get caught and we do nothing to them. Until we start doing something to them, then we'll start moving forward. Until we start saying to ourselves, we need to start cleaning up the United States and get these people off drugs, including the people over there in the state capitol in Colorado that wants to vote for this stupid overdose center, that doesn't help anything. We're so used to just blindsiding ourselves or sitting back and just saying, you know what, let's put a Band-Aid on this problem. As long as it doesn't affect me, I'll be okay. People understand something. It may not affect you directly, but indirectly, it will affect you. So, and it's just all this mess. We just got to start cleaning up, start being United States again, and start having some balls.
There you go. There you have it. And, you know, my final thought, I do believe the House of Cards is coming down. I do believe that the fact that a majority of voters now believe the Democrats played a role in sabotaging the 2020 election is absolutely indicative of a shift in thinking. And I think ultimately I'm still hopeful. I think we are going to win this war. But I would like to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. As always, I look forward to the next one. And, well, we'll see you there. 10-4?
10-4. That's that voter. Oh, hey, dude. And again, it's always good to have you guys on. And thanks to everybody who listens to us. Spotify, thank you. And you know what, people, we're just here to go ahead and bring another light to everything. You know, if you call in, if you disagree, call us. Say something. We want to hear from you. All right, because that's what this nation is about. We got to the part where if you say something and you offend, you say something that's opposite of what somebody else say, first thing when they come out of their mouth, say it's racist and I'm offended and I need to go in the corner and buy a pillow. You know what, folks? Thick skin. Let's start talking because that's how we solve things.
There you go. Thanks and good night, everybody, from the Disrespected Trucker Show. And remember, don't stop believing.
Heck yeah. Thank you.
I see.